This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Bobby Krivitsky. Hour one of the night's program in the books. We went three up, three down on the NFL draft. Who did the best? Who did the worst? Yes, I'm well aware that no one's played a snap yet. How can we really know? That doesn't mean we wait for the takes, folks. We did a deep dive around the association. Well, that's misleading. We did a shallow dive, but we looked around. We hit the biggest news of the night in the NBA, including Zion Williamson being sidelined indefinitely by a left ring finger injury. I think, personally, that does it for the Pelicans' playoff hopes this year. That means they're 0-2 in the Zion Williamson era, but they've got a treasure chest of draft picks, so we'll see how they bounce back this offseason. Certainly trust David Griffin to get that right, even though I'm not crazy personally about the decision to go from Alvin Gentry to Stan Van Gundy. Think they could have stuck with Gentry. They didn't. That's neither here nor there, though. And we'll see how they do moving forward with Stan Van at the helm in year two. We talked Patriots with Alex Barth. We also have coming up in this next half of the show, Lauren Campbell from Nesson talking Bruins, Mark Schofield from Touchdown Wire of USA Today Sports for a little chat about the NFL. And we'll be talking NBA with Basketball Insiders analyst Ariel Pacheco. Let's bring in our producer, Jack McCraw, back in Houston. Jack, we're going to start right here. First half of the show in the books. What's your favorite take you heard tonight? What's your least favorite take?
I like that y'all were talking about the Detroit Lions and how they've had a very successful draft. Now, I love the fact that they took Penei Sewell, and I think that the Bengals passing on Penei Sewell is going to come back to bite them, because I thought it was almost set in stone that they needed somebody to protect Joe Burrow, especially after he tore his ACL last year and missed half of the season. But that's crazy to think about, that they just passed him for Ja'Marr Chase, who's a great receiver nonetheless, but they should have went tackle.
And last but not least, Carlos Correa and Astro next season?
I'm going to say yes, but a low ball deal.
I'm guessing you're talking head over heart or heart over head there.
Absolutely.
We shall see how it all plays out. That's coming up next on the Diehards Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running the show behind the scenes. Let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Pleasure to be joined right now by Lauren Campbell, who works for Nesson. She covers all of Boston sports. She is also one-third of Nesson's Bruins podcast. Lauren, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course, of course. Let's start here. Bruins, one of arguably the hottest team in the NHL right now, but one of those players who it's tough to figure out what his role is going to be moving forward is Jake DeBrusk. What do you think holds for him in the postseason?
You know, I think it's his job to lose there on the third and fourth line. I think we saw some flashes of potential like we have all season on Thursday night. He had that goal, kind of got that monkey off his back there. But I think he's going to be playing with a little bit of fire under him. He knows what's at stake. He knows he's been healthy scratch to this year a few times. And Bruce Cassidy won't be afraid to do that in the playoffs to put forward his best lineup. So he's got to show a lot in these last few games here.
And he seems to respond well to those healthy scratches. Do you think that he's best utilized on the third line or on the fourth?
You know, I think he's good. I think he's good on the third. You know, what's good with the bottom six forwards there is they are interchangeable, but I like what he's been doing on the third. I think that he's responded well there. And like you said, he has done well after he's been healthy scratched, after he's been criticized. He really takes it that and runs with it. He just needs to be consistent with it.
All right, so Jake DeBrusk on line three. There's still going to be an odd man out on line four. How do you see that final forward pairing shaping up?
Oh, man, that's tough because, you know, you have Andre Kasha coming back. He skated today for the first time since the second game of the season. There's a lot of good players that could be left out. It could be Trent Frederick. It could be Sean Corrali. I really see those two. Even though Corrali's been good, obviously Trent Frederick has that physicality and that kind of enforcer mentality that you do need in the playoffs. But, you know, I think that those two could really be on the hot seat if everyone is healthy going forward.
Do you think it's possible for Andre Kasha to miss nearly the whole season, like you said, to all of a sudden come back, get his stamina, get comfortable with the guys, some of whom are new faces for him, and he's used to playing higher up the depth chart last year with the Bruins. You think it's possible for him to actually overtake that competition and be a starter for them in the postseason?
I do, but I think they're going to be very, very cautious with how they approach how they're going to bring him back in. We don't really know what his injury was. It was never really confirmed that it was a concussion or anything like that. But, you know, it's a lot. He's in such a weird position because when he got traded here, he couldn't really have time to build chemistry with his teammates because COVID paused the league. Playoffs come back and they're in the bubble and the games are starting right away. And then he plays two games and gets hurt. So he hasn't really had that time to build the chemistry, which I think is obviously very crucial to being a complete team. But I do think it's possible just because we know what kind of player he can be and why he was brought to the Bruins. And I know it's only three games left, and he won't be playing Saturday against the Rangers, but if he could play with some spark and some fire for these next two games, it might give Cassidy something to think about going forward with the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting audition for Kasha. Certainly someone who could help with five-on-five play. Another guy who does that is Charlie Coyle. Do you think he's best utilized as a third-line center or a second-line right wing?
Third-line center. I think that he's just, that's where he belongs. That's where he's really excelled, and that's where he's best utilized. We've seen him playing that right wing and that winger position on the second line, and he just doesn't quite fit. The center position is perfect for him, and then he really has responded the last few games very well. So that's a really good spot for him. I think he's meshed well. I think he kind of knows his role on that line, which is very, very important.
I'm with you. Just a little out of place on that right wing. I like him better in the middle. What do you see for the top defenseman pairing? Do you prefer them to split up McAvoy and Grizzlick, or do you say keep your two best defensemen together?
I think you got to keep them together. I think they've worked well together. I think that even though Grizzlick has hit some bumps this season with injury to no fault of his own, I just think that if it works, it works. And I think they complement each other very well, especially in the absence of Chara and Krug. They've really just really taken over that top defensive pairing, and you need to keep them together at all costs.
Once again, we are in agreement. Riley and Carlo, McAvoy and Grizzlick, that's what I'm hoping Cassidy does, at least for the bulk of the minutes. And then I'm guessing we're in accord once again. Swayman versus Halak for that backup goaltender job. Who do you like?
I have to go with Swayman. And
yes.
You know, I love Halak. I hate putting all that pressure on a rookie goalie, but 9 games, 7 wins, and even in his losses, they're not blowout losses, you know. They're close. He's making big saves still. He's completely composed after the games, after losses. He's not too hard on himself. He's like, let's just go get him next time. And, you know, I know that it's a lot of pressure to put on a 22-year-old kid to go into a playoff game or go into playoffs as the number two goalie because you're one injury away from being that starting goalie. And I think he can handle it. I think, again, small sample size from Swayman, but enough to be impressed by it and to give me the confidence that he has confidence to go in and stay poised, stay calm, and give his team a chance to win and go far in this playoff.
Yeah, maybe I'm forgetting one of the games he started, but I haven't come away from a single one of his outings thinking the reason they lost was because of him, or frankly, even that he had a bad performance. So I've been really impressed with Swayman. Has he been good enough? We know there's a lot of talk here in Boston about Tuukka Rask. Has he been good enough to convince Don Sweeney and company to move on from Rask this offseason and make Swayman the number one goaltender moving forward?
You know, I don't think so just yet. I think that, you know, obviously Tuukka's contract is up after this season. It's obviously Tuukka's choice what he wants to do with his future. If he wants to continue playing, if he wants to retire, whatever he wants to do, that's in his hands. But as much as I have loved what I've seen from Swayman, I still want him to get a little more repetition in Providence and get those reps, get that confidence built, because we certainly don't want a Carter Hart situation to happen to him where Carter Hart's confidence is through the roof and he doesn't really have that good of a season and almost looks like he's not the goalie he was, the goalie he was expected to be. And that can really hurt somebody's career going forward. So I think that at the end, in a perfect world, sign Tuukka to a 1 or 2 year extension if that's what he wants, if he wants to continue his career, and then go with Vladar for a little while, build that confidence with Swayman, and Swayman will be the starting goalie of the Boston Bruins at one point, whether that's some point next season or the season after. Like I believe he's the future of this team. I don't think there's any way around that. But for now, the time being, this time next year, I would just love to see him get a few more reps and build that confidence.
I think that's a great point about taking things slowly with Swayman, the Carter Hart comparison, and how it's been a rough year for him over in Philly. So you mentioned Vladar there. Is that a salary cap reason not to bring Halak back, even while taking things slowly and sending Swayman to Providence?
No, you know, I love Halak. I think he's done a fabulous job here. But what scares me, and we've seen this with, you know, throughout other Boston sports and other athletes, is he did have COVID and he hasn't looked great. I mean, granted, he missed a little while there. Once you have COVID, who knows the after effects and the side effects that he's dealing with, even though he's recovered. But, you know, I think that Halak is a fine backup. But I think when you have the talent that you do in Providence, I think it's just time to move on from him. Nothing against him. Love what he's done. But I think that it's time to give the young goalies a legitimate shot, see what you have in them, and just build them, because you have them for a reason. Let's see what they're made of.
As the postseason gets closer, what concerns do you have about this Bruins team?
You know, I still am a little concerned about five-on-five scoring, secondary scoring. It's been a lot better of late, but, you know, a big reason why they lost last year to Tampa Bay was they couldn't score five-on-five. It was awful. And, you know, you need to score on five-on-five. You need to score on the power play, but I always have this fear that the struggles from the regular season will come back to haunt them in the playoffs. And five-on-five scoring and the secondary scoring have been a big, big thing. And you obviously need to score goals to win games. And to do that, you need all of your forwards to be on their A game. So the five-on-five is like probably the biggest red flag for me.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I'm really curious to see how they do in a best-of-seven against a physical team, or if they draw the Islanders at any point. It's going to be interesting to see what this postseason holds for the black and gold. Lauren Campbell, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight on the Diehards. If you have any work you want to promote or your Twitter handle, go ahead. The stage is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. Find me on Twitter and across social media at La 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 Lauren. That's three laws. Lauren with four R's. And you can find all of my work on Nesson.com and hear me on the Nesson Bruins podcast once a week.
Lauren, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you, guys. You too.
All right, we will be back with Mark Schofield from the Touchdown Wire of USA Today Sports after this on the Diehards Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running the operation behind the scenes back in Houston. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Joined right now by Mark Schofield from Touchdown Wire of USA Today Sports. Mark, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Oh, Bobby, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be with you tonight.
Now, Mark, one thing I've been letting the listeners know throughout the program is that you are a quarterback savant. I don't consider that an exaggeration by any means. And what I did not fill them in on, though, is that there's no one better to talk to about Toto, about Africa, a classic hit, and, of course, about Scrubs as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm able to cover a couple of different bases for you tonight, Bobby. So if you want to talk quarterbacks, I'm more than willing to do that. But if you want to rank Scrubs characters or talk about Toto's hits other than Africa, I'm happy to go down that path with you as well.
Was it Rosanna also a Toto song?
Rosanna, you know, Hold the Line, Don't Hold Me Back. You know, lots of great hits from Toto.
See, we needed a Renaissance man in this time slot. That's why we went out and got Mark Schofield looking at matters on the gridiron. And by the way, Mark, you've got to be exhausted because I've seen your Twitter feed today. You've been on, it seems like, every show and podcast imaginable.
Yeah, it's been a long day. I think this is the fifth show of the day, but this is my favorite time of year, Bobby, because we spend so much time building up to the draft and speculating about what this offense look like if they draft this quarterback, or what might this defense look like if they add this player in the secondary. All that speculation's gone. Now we can actually talk about landing spots. We can talk about scheme fits. We could start to picture what offenses and defenses will look like next year. And so this is really, May and June are perhaps my two favorite months of the entire year covering football, because we can actually start to project what teams will look like once games kick off in the fall.
Mark, I'm with you on that, and you led me right to it. One of the teams that made me happiest at the draft, the San Francisco 49ers, they got it right.
Yeah, I think they did. And, you know, there were a lot of people, and I've almost put myself in this category, that started to, at the end of this draft cycle, buy into the idea that they would draft Mac Jones at 3 and give up the 2 future first-round picks to do it. But in the end, sure, Mac Jones could run that San Francisco 49ers offense and run it well. But they bet on the upside of Trey Lance. And in Trey Lance, they're getting somebody that not only can run that offense, because if you watch what Trey Lance was doing at North Dakota State, you will see a lot of carryover between that NDSU offense and what Kyle Shanahan asks of his quarterbacks under center, play action, hit the tight end, hit the fullback in the flat, move the chains, all that sort of stuff. You can see a lot of that at NDSU's offense. But they're also getting in Lance, the kind of quarterback that can transcend that offense. You think about all the outside zone and boot action designs off of it with the quarterback rolling out to the flat. It's one thing when it's a Jimmy Garoppolo or even hypothetically a Mac Jones rolling out and you're that defender in the corner flat sort of reading the play. You're not too worried about that guy tucking in and going. But if you see Trey Lance coming, you're going to be worried about that. You might start climbing down towards the line of scrimmage, maybe break downhill on that because you're worried about Lance keeping and running. And that's going to open up throwing lanes for Lance downfield. And so his athleticism is going to open up and unlock portions of that Kyle Shanahan playbook that he really hasn't had to use basically perhaps since RG3. And so I'm really excited about what Lance can do in that offense. I'm really excited for this scheme fit. And I do think that he might play earlier rather than later.
And Mark, that once again leads me perfectly into my next question. It's so interesting that Trey Lance is a quarterback who, on the one hand, he was setting protections at North Dakota State, and on the other, is widely considered, because his lack of game experience, to be a raw prospect. Just how early do you anticipate him being the starting signal caller for the Niners?
You know, it's interesting, Bobby. We're going to get that schedule released next week. One of the things that we all love, those of us that get to cover the NFL, is how well the league sprinkles little events throughout the calendar year. So next week we'll get schedule release and we can all start talking about what games we're excited about. But I'm curious when San Francisco will have bye weeks, you know, because that might be a time, say they get a bye week early, bye week late, whenever. That you could look at and say, like the Dolphins did last year with Tua, we're going to play, you know, whether it's Garoppolo or a more experienced quarterback until that point, and then turn the keys over to Trey Lance. So that could be one way they approach it. But I do think that Lance, because of, like you said, the things he was asked to do with the line of scrimmage at NDSU, set in protections, kill calls, maybe calls, that goes right into how Shanahan calls plays. He'll call two plays and say, you know, we'll do one play and then where the second play, you call them both in the huddle, you get to the line of scrimmage, pick the one you want to run against the defensive look. That's that kill call or maybe system that Trey Lance was doing at NDSU. You can also look at how, like you said, he was getting in and out of plays. He was checking out of pressure looks and into run looks. A lot of people said, look, Trey Lance, they didn't trust him in that national championship game against James Madison because he ran the ball so many times. A lot of those plays, Bobby, were passing plays called in the huddle that Lance got to the line of scrimmage, saw that they were blitzing and said, you know what, I got to get us out of this and check to a run play. So he could do a lot at the line of scrimmage. And so I do think while they might be conservative in terms of when they actually start him, I do think that, yeah, he's ready to go sooner than people expect.
Yeah, it's interesting how that part of it got left out of the conversation when it came to Trey Lance's performance against James Madison. And now let's zoom out here beyond just Trey Lance, as much as I think this is such a great pairing with him and Kyle Shanahan. I'm curious, even after the fact, I want to know, Mark, how did you rank the top five quarterbacks in this draft class?
Well, for me, I had them. Trevor Lawrence was one. Justin Fields, two. And I really looked at Lawrence and Fields as more of a 1A, 1B. I really was high on Justin Fields. And obviously, we know this discourse and you know, surrounded Justin Fields this draft cycle. I didn't see any of the concerns with him. I was so high on him and remain so high on Justin Fields. But you had Lawrence, one. Fields, two. Wilson, three. Lance, four. Jones, five. But all five of those guys were first-round quarterbacks in this draft for a reason. I think all five are good to great prospects at the position. And I think now that it's all said and done, you could look at all five and say they all felt really good situations. I mean, whether it's Lawrence to Jacksonville and all the weapons that they're able to add and the draft capital they had, Mac Jones coming to New England, which people thought was probably a good fit for him stylistically. You know, the Jets had a very good draft, and, you know, Chicago coming up, being aggressive and getting Justin Fields. I think all five of these first-round quarterbacks find themselves in good situations to start their NFL careers.
And when it comes to Justin Fields, you may have just answered this, Mark, but he's got this elongated throwing motion. Do you think that's something that he's going to need to shorten up at the next level, or can he win with that?
I think he can win with it. You know, I think part of it is going to be the mental side of it from Justin Fields. Now, I know there was a lot of discussion about Fields. People saying he can't work through progressions. Yes, he can. People saying he can't work through a read. Yes, he can. People saying he can't throw with anticipation. Yes, he can. He could do all of these things. But all of these young quarterbacks are going to have to get faster with their reads and decisions. The NFL, even if you're a really good quarterback mentally, like people say about Mac Jones, you're still going to have to get faster with your reads and decisions because the game, the athletes, the rotations, the coverages, everything happens a million miles faster than it does at the college level. And so Fields will have to get a little bit quicker with his mind. So it's that little extra, like, half second in a row in motion doesn't really become a problem. So I think he can still play and win and be effective with that a little bit of a elongation to the throw in motion. But the arm velocity too, Bobby, makes up for that. He has such a good arm that even if there's an extra little bit of delay with the ball coming out right now, the velocity plus the, you know, mental side of it is going to take care of that. So I'm not really worried about his mechanics. I didn't see situations at Ohio State where that little motion, that little baseball motion he has, caused him problems. If we start seeing that, though, on Sundays, then we can revisit the mechanics of his throwing motion.
Mac Jones is a quarterback who wins with intellect, accuracy, and I think he moves better than he's given credit for, in the pocket at least. But now everything's going to get harder at the next level. How much better can he get?
I think he could still get better. I know people, when you start to talk about Mac Jones, and a lot of the people that looked at Mac Jones said, look, he's got the high floor, but maybe he's a finished product. I do think he can get better. What's interesting about Jones is, like you said, Bobby, I do think he handles pressure in the pocket better than he gets credit for. I think he's smart enough to understand weaknesses in protection schemes and to anticipate when he has to leave pockets early if there's a blitz or something else that they can't get blocked up. There's a lot of evidence of him doing that on film. And so I think there's area for improvement there. And I do think that that sort of like pocket feel, that pocket toughness, he had a lot of plays last year for Alabama where he knew he was going to get the big hit, but he hung in there, took that big hit, threw touchdowns, made big plays for his offense. And so I do think that there is a ceiling that people maybe don't give him credit for, that there's a room for growth there for him to improve as a quarterback. But we know the reason why the Patriots probably valued him, because you watch his game, you see the accuracy in the short area of the field. We know that traditionally the Patriots value yardage after the catch, accuracy, and decision-making from the quarterback position. Those are some strengths of his. And so I do think New England's ability to sort of stay at 15 and draft him made a lot of sense for that organization at that point in the first round.
Mark Schofield from Touchdown Wire, USA Today Sports. Always a pleasure, Mark. Take care. Have a great night. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back with some NBA talk on the other side of this break. Sports Map Radio Network, you're listening to the Diehards.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running the thing in Houston. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Joined right now by a colleague of mine, Ariel Pacheco from Basketball Insiders, does tremendous work, especially if you like the New York Knicks. His video breakdowns the day after each one of their games is something I always look forward to. Ariel, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thanks for having me, Bobby. I'm happy to be here.
For sure, for sure. What are your expectations? Let's talk about the blue and orange right now. What are your expectations for Tom Thibodeau's club in the playoffs?
I think it really depends on the matchup. They're currently the fourth seed. If they stay at number four and they go up against a team like the Hawks, I'd like their chances. They've matched up well this season, although Capella and Trae Young have given them some issues. But I do think that's their most favorable matchup, especially when you consider the other options are the Celtics, the Heat. And so when you put that into perspective, you don't want to play a team like the Celtics or the Heat who have made really deep playoff pushes in the past few seasons.
Yeah, it would certainly be on the unfortunate side if they ended up holding down that fourth spot, getting home court, which Madison Square Garden with fans back in the building, that would be an enormous advantage to have, but still to face a team like the Celtics or the Heat would be cause for concern for sure. Julius Randle, all-star Julius Randle, having an amazing season. Do you think he earns an all-NBA spot too?
I think he definitely deserves it. You know, he's been at the center of the success this season. Aspects of his game has improved. Shooting, playmaking, defense. It's been a complete 180 from the player he was last season. His three-point percentage, it's increased by 14% from last season, which is insane. But it's even crazier when you realize he's taking two more three-point attempts per game. I think he's also deserving of being in the MVP conversation. I don't think he's like a finalist, like a top candidate, but anywhere from like 4 to 6, 7, he's right in that conversation.
Yeah, anyone who wants to go deeper into that convo, his name's got to be brought up. I'm with you on that one for sure. And look, I know Tom Thibodeau is the coach and what he demands out of his players, but to see the commitment from Randle defensively has been unbelievable. His improvement as a playmaker as opposed to a black hole offensively has been very just commendable to see. And, of course, he's at the center of the Knicks' success this season. Another guy who is as well is R.J. Barrett. What's impressed you most about the second-year forward's growth this season?
His shooting. He just took another leap with the shooting. I don't know if any of you guys remember, at the beginning of the season, he was awful. I think he had missed like 17 straight threes at one point, and now he's almost automatic. He's shooting, give or take, about 45% since like the beginning of February. They're running more for him to get threes open. He's creating out of the pick and roll. His finishing is getting better. His feel has gotten stronger. And his defense has been really underrated. I don't think people talk about that enough as well.
Yeah, and to back up what you're saying about his improvement as a shooter, nearly 40% from beyond the arc this season while taking just north of four attempts per game. So it's certainly commendable to realize the work that he's put in there. Good for him to get the rewards from doing so. What, in your estimation, does he need to focus on addressing in the offseason so that he can take his game to an even higher level his third year in the league?
I think his ball handling has to improve a bit so he can create his own shot a little bit more. He's been taking a lot more pull-ups this season from two-point range, and we've started to see a little bit more of him taking pull-up three-pointers. If he can create more of his own looks and he can become a more consistent shot creator, and if he can also add movement three-pointers into his game, right now he's more of like a spot-up shooter. Every once in a while, he'd take a three when people go under the screen. But if he can really extend his range and add the ball handling part of that, he can be like a really special scorer.
For sure. Now, Knicks fans have done a great job living in the moment, enjoying this season. They've been one of arguably the most fun team to watch across the association this year. But there's that other part where you start thinking down the line as you build this culture that will appeal to star free agents. Who's that top-tier player who you have in mind for coming to New York to help lead the Knicks back to championship pedigree?
the stars seem to be aligning for Damian Lillard to become a New York Knicks. I don't know how likely that is. He's, you know, his whole persona is being that guy that's loyal. He doesn't this guy who wants to go ring chasing, or, you know, he wants to stick it through. But, you know, Portland's kind of been on a little bit of a downswing. You know, they're having rumors that their coach is going to be fired, Terry Stotts. So I think if things go really bad in the playoffs this season, and it might because their defense has been really bad to watch, Damian Lillard could be a Knick. And they have the assets. They have the pieces. They have the draft picks. They have the young players. They can make a swing at the next available star, whether it be Lillard. It could be Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't know how like is. I don't really like the fit with him and Randall. But Towns could be another, probably the next all-star level talent that's available.
Can I tell you, I think it would be such a mistake for the Knicks to go after Karl-Anthony Towns. And look, he's a great player. I'm not denigrating his talent, but as a center, especially more of a one-way player, to build up what the Knicks are doing this season, and granted, it's a quick turnaround, but maybe it only needs to be a short one when you're in the Big Apple, number one media market in the country. I would much rather see them go after a player like Damian Lillard or an impact wing like a Bradley Beal, for instance, than Karl-Anthony Towns at the center spot. Like you said, they've got Julius Randle, not a center, but rather than pair those two together, I'd much rather see the Knicks go after a player at a more impactful position. You can find a good center for less. Just look at Nerlens Noel, the season that he's having for the Knicks. So I would say steer clear of Cat, as great a player as he is, because the goal, after all, is to get the Larry O'Brien Trophy once again. Hard pivot right now, Ariel, as we focus on this season and what's going on. A lot of players who they look at their team getting closer and closer to having to participate in the play-in tournament, speaking out against it. Are you for or against it?
I'm definitely for the play-in game. It's fun. Less teams are tanking this season. There's about 11 to 12 teams in each conference that have a chance at getting in the play-in game. That number is kind of sliding off game by game, but teams have had a reason to be competitive at the end of the season, which is an issue that we've had the NBA has had as a product in the past few years. So I think at the end of the day, I understand the players' frustration. You know, they play a whole season and the season can come to an end on one game. But I think at the end of the day, the best product forward for the fans. And I think the fans are really going to be appreciative of the playing tournament and the kind of atmosphere it's going to create.
I'm with you. And maybe it proves to be a statistical anomaly, but I thought one of the trade-offs was we'd have a real quiet trade deadline, and I'm okay with that. I think it's worth it, but we didn't even have that. We had one of the highest volume of trades that I can recall in recent years. There's something like over 13 trades, I'm pretty sure, this year. So maybe that doesn't continue, but if we don't even have to sacrifice that, then all the better. Certainly there's a lot of fans out there who love the transactional portion of the league. So I think the play-in tournament is a success and should stay with the NBA beyond just these COVID-impacted seasons. Who's the more dangerous play-in tournament team, in your estimation, the Hornets or the Washington Wizards?
I got to go with the Wizards. If the Hornets were fully healthy, I'd probably say them, but Gordon Hayward, he's still not back yet. LaMelo's just getting back. The Wizards have been on a tear lately. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal have been one of the most explosive backcourts in the NBA this season. Westbrook kind of started off slow, but, you know, as he recovered from, you know, he had some injury problems at the end of last season, you know, COVID, he's really bounced back and he's looking like MVP Westbrook lately. Bradley Beal, I think he's still leading the league in scoring, or he might just be behind. I'm pretty sure he's ahead, but he's been insane. He stuck it through in Washington. He believes in them. I believe in them. I think they are a dangerous playing team.
Yeah, I'm certainly with you on that one. The Wizards, they're as hot as any team in the league right now. I believe they're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Beal and Westbrook are clicking. Team is finally healthy. So they're one of those squads who you do not want to face come play-in tournament time. Is this the year, looking out west, that we get that battle of Los Angeles in the postseason?
I think so, and I hope so. It's shaping up that it could happen. The Lakers are the 6th seed. The Clippers are the 3rd seed. A lot can change. A lot is changing day by day at this point. The standings are so close together. But, I mean, I think everybody wants to see it, especially after that disappointing loss the Clippers faced last year in the bubble. The Clippers are much improved this year. A lot of people, I understand why a lot of people are down on them. A loss like that, you know, a lot of people are going to lose faith in you after that. But the Lakers and Clippers, the Battle of L.A., everybody wants to see it. I want to see it. I hope we see it.
I do, too. And to see it in the first round would just be stunning. It's certainly got the potential right now to take place. But with the Clippers, I really didn't believe in them this year until they got Rondo close to the buzzer at the trade deadline. He's exactly what they need, someone who can organize that offense and bring structure to it. It's a huge part of why they collapsed last year in the postseason, and not to mention his championship pedigree. He's a leader. He'll get on top of his teammates in terms of keeping them motivated and more headstrong than they seemed to be last year. Obviously, a lot going on with the bubble, but nonetheless, I think Rondo checks all the boxes for what they needed. So even though it hurts to part with someone like Lou Will, who helped build that culture that attracted Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, huge acquisition for the Clippers, just exactly what that team needs if it's going to maximize its championship potential. Swinging things back over to the East, between the Nets, the Sixers, and the Bucks, only two can get to the conference finals. Who, in your estimation, is the team that doesn't make it that far?
The team that doesn't make it, in my opinion, is the 76ers. I just don't have too much faith in their half-court offense in the playoffs. They're very Embiid-centric. He's been a monster, and he can certainly handle the load. And if he were to match up against the Nets, he'd probably have an all-day series because they have nobody who can handle him. But I'm concerned about their half-court offense. Tobias Harris has been really good this season. Ben Simmons has been really good this season. But when teams start to double Embiid, and he's done a better job this year passing out of the double team, you're going to be relying on Tobias Harris, Steph Curry, you know, Furkan Korkmaz to knock down shots, and they have, to their credit this season. But I have more faith in the Bucks, who, you know, traded for Drew Holiday. That's an upgrade in talent that I think was necessary. They also, you know, they did the trade for PJ Tucker. I like their five, their closing five, of which hopefully is Middleton, Giannis, Drew, PJ Tucker, and Dante DiVincenzo. I think that's a really nice closing five. So I have a lot more faith in the Bucks. And the Nets, they just have so much star power that their margin for error is so high that they can literally not play defense and have a chance at winning games.
Yeah, the Nets, they could be without one of their stars, and you'd still think they get to the conference finals. They're that good. And so I get Steve Nash's concerns that the lack of continuity this team is going to have going into the postseason. I think they'll be just fine with the talent that they have. I fully expect them there as long as they're healthy and have at least two of their top three. The Bucks, I'm with you. I think they found a closing lineup, adding Tucker plus DiVincenzo to complement that other group. They've experimented this year, among other things, with having Giannis off the ball more often in the closing lineup. I think they can get him the ball in the pinch post more often than they have, and less of that trying to have him attack from the top of the key. But they are gravitating the other way with it, which is nice to see. And the Sixers, look, we can't count a team like that out, and I'm not putting words in your mouth there. I know that's not what you're saying, but it is one of those where you look at the math equation, and yes, Embiid is getting better, passing out of double teams. He's got more trust in his teammates this season, understandably so, because they're better shooters. But I just look at it and say, if they're trading twos for threes, I don't know if they beat one of those top teams and get all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. So I think we're eye to eye on that one as well. Ariel, I'll get you out on this question. Are the Phoenix Suns a legitimate threat to get to the conference finals?
They are a very legitimate threat. I was very high on them at the start of the season. One of the first pieces I wrote for Basketball Insiders was me claiming that the Suns were legit contenders like 8 games into the season. They just have such a well-balanced offensive attack. You know, CP3 and Booker, they've been one of the best backcourts in the NBA. Mikal Bridges has taken a leap. You know, he's one of the best two-way guys in the NBA. They have one of the best benches in the NBA. I think their playoff hopes at the end of the day are going to lie at the hands of DeAndre Ayton and his ability to defend and score in the paint. They're a jump shooting team. They don't get to the basket a lot. Chris Paul and Booker, they're always taking pull-ups, and they're elite at it, and they should. But they don't get to the basket much, so they really need DeAndre Ayton's ability to roll to the basket to create that drive to the paint.
I'm with you, man. The Suns are legitimate. They're one game out of the top spot in the Western Conference entering tonight's action. Ariel Pacheco, Basketball Insiders, be sure to check out his work. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on the Diehards.
Thanks for having me.
For sure. All right. That pretty much brings the show to a close. We're going to put the finishing touches on tonight's episode. That's coming up after a quick break here on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running things back in Houston. Jack, done a tremendous job tonight as the producer of this program. You have any big plans for the weekend?
Spending Mother's Day on Sunday with my mom, but I am going to be working up here at the radio station Saturday and Sunday night on the Dave Smith Show from 9 to 1 Eastern Time. Check me out.
This guy's got two jobs and never sleeps. Tonight's program, of course, is presented to you by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Jack, admire the hustle. Get that money. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight, folks. We started off with a deep dive into the NFL, three up, three down from the NFL draft, then a look around the NBA, expounded on that just now with Ariel Pacheco in this last segment. We had Alex Barth from 98.5 The Sports Hub and this very program on to talk Pats. We had some Bruins banter with Lauren Campbell of Nesson and a little NFL chat expounding on the quarterbacks in this past draft class. Mark Schofield, I'm Bobby Krivitsky, he's Jack McGraw. Thanks for listening to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Happy Mother's Day, everyone.